You're listening to Dig Deep on KAXE, KBXE. I'm Heidi Holton with liberal commentator Aaron Brown and conservative Chuck Marone, taking up this idea of education and whether we should continue to invest in education.
In the last segment, Aaron was talking about what I would call like the exclusivity of a college degree or some type of licensing or certificate and what that gets you. And I think there's a good way to think about this because there's a train of thought right now that's being pushed largely from Silicon Valley, but in other places too, against the Harvard Ivy League kind of complex. So if you're Harvard, you have 1,500 students you admit every year. And if Harvard is such like a great place, it produces these wonderful students who go on to make six figures every year. They're the most sought after people. The assumption is that Harvard has done something amazing with their education system that has created these world-class people who everybody wants to employ. Why doesn't Harvard take the next decade or the next two decades and expand the greatness that they are doing? So that they ultimately would admit 3,000 people a year, not 30,000, not 50,000, but let's just go from 1,500 to 3,000. When you suggest that, the outrage from the Harvard people who are there, from the alumni, from everybody, yeah. Mm-hmm. They go nuts. And why is it? Because a degree from Harvard is not a representation of how intelligent you are, of what you've learned, of your level of wisdom. I'm not suggesting people go to Harvard are not smart. I'm sure they are. But people go to University of Minnesota are very smart too. If we're going to balance out IQs, it's not like Harvard has a higher percentage. If you look at this, what a Harvard degree is an exclusivity badge. You are one of an exclusive group, and that buys you a certain amount of access to things that people with degrees from other places do not have. Let's flip this back now to Northeastern Minnesota, where we have a small percentage of people from this realm going to Harvard, and an even smaller percentage of those who ultimately return back here from that. Why are we creating burdens and obstacles and exclusivities to reach like base levels of attainment in our society? Why, if you're going to go to work at a place, you have to have a two-year degree here? Why do we put that in as a requirement? And I think conversely, when we look at the other side of the equation, there's a certain amount of, I think, driving this that education itself does. And this is where like you were getting a little bit into, I'm going to say this in my language, and I expect you to push back on this, but there's a little bit of like an education racket here, where it's like, okay, one of the easy things to do is to say, let's increase the amount of education. Boy, that's really good for professors and administrators and everybody in education because it keeps them gainfully employed. And the more unemployment we have and the more hurt we have in this area and the more people are struggling, you know what we need? We need more education. We need to pump more money into schools and we need more loans and we need more of this kind of education complex. Maybe what we need is actually to just lower some of these gates and treat this kind of how we're going to actually bring people in and give them either A, the skills they need to be functioning in our society, or B, the wisdom that they need to kind of raise us to a higher level as a culture. Maybe we need to find a different way of expressing those two things.
And I will push back on the racket business, but but I'll do so in a roundabout way, of course, being an academic. I was just, before you got to that part, I was reminded of, I've heard versions of this from every blue collar working class person I know from the, I'm from the range, you know. So you hear stories like this. Oh, they got a new GM, manager, foreman, whoever at the, and you know, he's got a 4-year degree. Uh-huh. They require that they have a 4-year degree now. So he's got a business degree from St. Cloud State or even like a private school or something like St. Scholastica, or you know, we're not dealing with Harvard necessarily, but you know, and they're 28, you know, and they came in here with all of these big ideas, but they don't, you know, they almost ran out of coal, you know, you didn't get the coal order. And so this, I think, is kind of feeding, you know, the idea that the hiring of our, particularly the leadership at a lot of companies, is focused on these educational credentials, which I think is what you were talking about. And then the people who do the job, who, you know, through experience know the job, find that that person doesn't understand the core mission, the core purpose of the company and what they do.
I'll give you a very personal example. When I was right out of college, so I mean, I have this book degree as a civil engineer. I have no practical knowledge of working out in the field. My first job was inspecting major wastewater system construction. And I mean, I'm learning on the job from the people I'm inspecting.
Yeah.
And their joke was, last week I couldn't spell engineer and now I is one. and they used to just taunt me relentlessly because they knew stuff that I had no clue about. Yeah. Right.
And you were reliant on their kindness, if you want to call it that,
to
help you understand what's going on. So I only say that that could be one of a dozen stories that I've heard from people. And so the notion is, well, it's college degree didn't necessarily produce somebody who was ready to lead this company. But the pushback I'll give, and this is in defense of the young you and the young managers, is that even if that person wasn't ready and maybe shouldn't have been the manager or the inspector, what the company was trying for was for a nimble professional who is as comfortable or couldn't become as comfortable on the plant floor as they are interacting with investors and high order people, customers, people who are discriminating in terms of their expectations from a professional. And this is what I've, because my dad he has a technical degree in diesel mechanics, but a knowledge base that I would put similar to, close to on par with like a mechanical engineer, just self-taught shop stuff, manufactures gears and he manufactures, you know, systems that work together. And maybe I'm just buying into his own self-hype a little bit. Maybe my dad's not as smart as he says he is, but I'm just joking. But that kind of self-made kind of thing is, A, it's an important part of our culture. We all kind of respond to that. But on the other hand, you know, I have dealt with many students who are like, they come into class, they got the do-rag on, and they're like, I don't care what people think of me. I'm just going to work in my shop and I'm just going to make it in business, you know, and I'm going to make it, you know, whatever. But like, you know, you're turning off customers left and right with your attitude, with your lack of customer service skills, your poor investment. And I see a lot of small businesses fail around the range, sole proprietorships that go under because the person maybe had the right kind of knowledge to do certain aspects of the job, but that there are some, you know, people skills, communication and business skills that are taught at colleges that do matter. And that a degree is one way of showing that you have these things. And if the college is doing their job, and this is a struggle, I won't lie, every college struggles with how to demonstrate this. If the college is doing their job, the experience that student gets should do that. That's the paradox of this whole thing. There are things you have to be able to do, this nimbleness, and some of it, and sometimes I wonder, this is just maybe a tangent, how much of this is just in a person's nature and how much of it can be taught. I think a lot of people, and this is the core of my business, I teach public speaking, and you know, there are gifted natural public speakers. I only really need to guide rather than instruct. But there are a lot more who need instruction and who, upon receiving instruction, can become professional speakers, can become, you know, manager-level speakers in public, can do a good job. And so the old cliche would be, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There are a lot of problems here. And I've identified one of them being the inequality of access and the inequality of cost. You know, who bears the cost of all of this? And a lot of it is our state and federal and local governments, but a lot of it is individuals, and the individuals who could least afford it often, or maybe not least afford it, but who have the least help from the government and no particular savings to fall back on themselves, that middle crowd, that upper lower class, lower middle class, seems to be, from my observations over a few years of teaching, where people are just getting nailed because they're often coming out with no degree. They had to work their way through college. Work got in the way. Family life got in the way. Lack of access to mental health care is just a huge part of what we deal with. And so they end with a few thousand bucks in debt, no degree, and they're working almost pretty much where they would have worked if they hadn't gone to college.
Right.
You know, and so that then you hear the frustrations. One of the most conservative groups in elections, if you look at the crosstabs on votes, is some college. Some college is a conservative demographic. It's people who tried but did not complete a college education, and they usually have debt.
Right.
And it throws off their whole professional and personal life.
It sets them back decades.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you look at this, the guy who has the four-year degree, who took the manager job and is kind of the young upstart.
I have some sympathy. Maybe. And like you, I was...
No, that was me.
That was me too.
But
you know,
I think that when we look at that person, there's no doubt that that person needs and benefits from a college degree. And I would argue that that person would also benefit from being surrounded by the ongoing learning process mm-hmm. of continuing to gain wisdom, which in many ways is easier today than it's ever been. The access you have to information, if you're a curious person, is endless today. So, you know, that's why when I say there, my brother, I think, is one of the most genius savant kind of people I've ever met. He has a technical degree. He reads, he's curious, he's so interesting, he has all these deep mm-hmm. insights. None of it comes from a college, you know, setting.
Right.
I think that the burden we place on that person with the four-year degree, who's now the young upstart manager, is that we have made that degree so ridiculously expensive because of how we have basically pushed everyone into that. We've said everybody needs to have this. And so in a sense, on one hand, loses its exclusivity, but it also becomes like this bar you cross, this thing that you have to burden yourself with this mm-hmm. debt. You must achieve this thing. You must, cross this line.
Can I just share, like, when I was in school, and you remember the first segment I talked about, you know, I grew up poor and education really made a big difference in my life. When I was finishing high school, the dream I had was to go to Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois, which is one of those exclusive colleges. I had a vision of getting this journalism degree. I want to point out that was a little more plausible then than it is now. But that's what I wanted, the Medill School of Journalism. I wanted to a lot of great journalists come out of that school, national people. That's what I saw myself doing. What I did, though, is, and I'm glad I did this, and a lot of people don't do this, because I easily could have pushed myself to take out a lot of debt and do it, or try too hard to try to get more scholarships and try to do it. But I did the math, and I realized that if I went there, I could never return to Northern Minnesota, which at the time I wasn't sure I wanted to, but I wanted the option to.
Right.
And I realized that, okay, and this is at the time, $30,000 a year in debt, $120,000. At the time, that was just monumental. This was in the 90s. Like, that's a lot of money. It's practically normal now for a lot of people going for a four-year degree at anything above a state school. I shouldn't say above.
It's the ante for that exclusivity.
Working as I do for the state system. So I just crunched the numbers and I said, you know, for all of this, and I also went there, I didn't feel like I fit in as well as I thought I might.
Right.
They're just people with too many connections that I just didn't have. I went to a smaller private school for a year and I even felt that way. So point being, a lot of people, I think, have this notion that if they get this degree, they got their magic ticket. And in fact, the speaker at my graduation from UW-Superior, where I ultimately ended up, I laughed at the time, but he was talking about, he was from Milwaukee, so he was talking about how for the poor kids where he grew up, the degree was a passport to the middle class.
Right.
And I remember laughing like, ha, you know, passport to the middle class. Like, can we aim a little higher? Come on, you know. But then that is true in that it is one of those, it is like a passport. And getting one is not unlike applying for a passport. And that's, I think, what's wrong with it. Not that the degree is bad, not that the learning is bad. Obviously, I'm in the business of teaching and learning. But we have to figure out how to create those organic experiences within the educational process that create thinkers and doers and learners.
Let me use that idea of a passport as mm-hmm. 'cause I think that's a good way to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
To me, by forcing a whole segment of society to obtain a passport, what we've done is we've elevated the cost of a passport. We've mm-hmm. made a passport like really expensive. And I feel like I'm arguing this both sides a little bit, because I'm saying there's an exclusivity here to get the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to fix that. I think that there should be a path to the middle class that doesn't involve this high ante of cost.
Mm-hmm.
But part of the side effect of that is that you do make college a little more exclusive. College would not be for everyone. It would really be for more this wisdom track. Like, I'm trying to have this broader base of understanding that's maybe not a technical understanding. Chuck Marone's not going to be able to walk out of his, you know, 4-year degree at the University of Minnesota and go inspect a sewage treatment facility and know what the pipe invert is and how to calculate that. And that's stuff he's going to learn on the job. But this gives you like a base of wisdom so you can talk to the investor, talk to the city council member, talk to the line worker all at the same time and communicate with them. I get the value of that. I think that by creating that ante, what we have done is we have created more access to education at the cost of less access to prosperity and less access to actual like middle class. And I think if we rethought that commitment to educate, the idea that education solves everything, and instead say, maybe there's a wisdom tract and maybe there's a skills tract. And those are tracks that are really important, but they don't necessarily have to fit in this kind of rubric that we created of higher education.
And I think we're, this is happening, by the way, just in my line of work, this separation is happening. We're a community in technical college, and frankly, the technical college is what's keeping us open. It's because people are interested in a 1 or 2 year program that can get them directly into a job, relatively low cost. Well, in fact, the lowest cost you can get from a sit down school. And so that's the bread and butter. And then we also have students, especially post-secondary students coming out of the high schools looking for early, again, this is a way for them to get free college, essentially, some version of it, among the academically eligible. The liberal arts program is really just a feeder. We're feeding people into a 4-year school somewhere else, typically. And quite often, those students are quite young taking those courses. And we have to try to separate the notion of like what we call college, which has all of these. When I say college, I think of John Belushi wearing the shirt that says college, you know, from Animal House.
Right.
You know, no specific college. And if you want, and I just saw Animal House again over the weekend, probably not my best position to argue from as a college educator. But I look at Animal House and I think how it kind of represents in a comedic way this notion of mediocrity within the academy. You know, it's mocking the pretense of a private college and all that it allegedly represents, when in fact a bunch of drunken losers can basically get in and totally destroy it from the inside and expose all the hypocrisy within it. And still, as John Belushi's character at the end of the movie, we learn, still become a United States senator.
Sure.
at the end of it all. But because probably he got a start at this college and has a degree and all this. You know. So I think when I say college and you think of John Belushi with the college t-shirt, a college sweatshirt, you think about that kind of mediocrity of the upper class, the cast-offs of the upper class who weren't that smart, but their daddy has money, and they're protected in this academic system. I think, and this is, I'm going to say another triggering word for Chuck, and that word is Scandinavia. what I've learned a little bit about, for instance, in Sweden, where I've met some journalists and done a few stories, not a lot. I've never been there, but I've covered a few things that relate over there because there are so many similarities in our economies. And I'm really interested in how they do higher education because, first of all, I know we have non-traditional students and people come back to college to retrain when they're laid off, when the mines lay off, for instance. There's a whole sub-conversation there. But we retrain workers who are dislocated. But they look at the technical retraining not as like, in this horrible circumstance, we're going to retrain you. It's a constant thing. They will reach into an employer and say, hey, if this company is going to survive, it has to adopt new techniques and technology, new product lines, maybe even change its focus entirely. And the Swedish higher education system will help a private company retrain its whole workforce toward a goal before they've laid off the workers. And they'll even shut a place down, retool it, and come back with a retrained workforce and an arguably more successful company. Those workers never left the private payroll. That's the kind of thing I think I see more of a future in. Not discounting the knowledge or experiences that are so important about education, but acknowledging that for some people, you know, if you're going to be a professor and an advanced thinker in a specialty field, well, the traditional academy is still going to be there, needs to be there for our advanced thinking. But on the other hand, and it's not that advanced thinking can't occur at the lowliest among us, it's just that we need to acknowledge that those experiences in the education are what really count. And that the degree is an accomplishment, but it is not necessarily the thing we most need. I said that out loud. Holy cow.
Let's talk about this. I think the European model is very interesting and has a number of different challenging things for us. Let's start with that in the next segment.
You're listening to Dig Deep on KEXE KBXE.